This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Taking action on climate change isn't just reserved for climate summits. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. At the G20 gathering in Bali today, 9 rich countries have pledged at least $20 billion to enable the host nation, Indonesia, to reach carbon neutrality by 2050. That is a decade earlier than planned. With the funding, Indonesia, which is now highly dependent on coal, will be able to nearly double renewable energy generation within the next 8 years. The BBC's Jonathan Head has more from Bali.
On the black volcanic sand of a North Bali beach, fisherman Supriyadi prepares his little boat for an evening's work offshore. Behind him rise the tall chimney, the cranes and mounds of coal of the Chelukanbawang power plant, which he and his neighbours accuse of polluting the land and sea around it. The fish have been driven far out to sea, he says. We have much further to travel. And he says people no longer want to buy his catch. This power plant, funded largely by a Chinese company, is one of 127 that are fueled by coal in Indonesia. Now Indonesia hopes to be an example of how a big country with huge economic development needs can outline a path towards zero carbon emissions, with significant international help. But how fast is it willing to go? In the lovely Balinese town of Ubud, Koman Wahyu Suteja supervises the building of his latest boutique hotel. Bali is only just starting to recover from the devastating impact of the COVID pandemic, which saw this island cut off from international tourists for 2 years. For them, growth is a more urgent priority than sustainability.
I see some of my staff, after a year, when we cannot support them, they go back home, they become farmer again. You can see they come very skinny. A lot of people just don't have money anymore.
That was very much on the mind of Luhut Panjaitan when I met him. He's the Minister for Maritime Affairs and Investment and leading the negotiations for an energy transition deal.
I don't think that we can just reduce our coal fire while our economy stays like this. So we have a timeline. But please respect also to the interests of Indonesia. Otherwise, no prosperity here, only poverty.
That timeline is the problem. Indonesia would like to keep building coal-fired power stations for several more years while it develops alternative energy sources. But environmental groups argue that this is unnecessary, as after the pandemic, Indonesia now has a surplus of power in its most populous areas. Just how much international help Indonesia gets will now be the subject of some tough and complex negotiations. If they succeed, though, with such a large and coal-dependent developing country, others will hopefully follow.
That's the BBC's Jonathan Head reporting from Bali there. Well, from climate to geoeconomics at the G20 summit, it's seen the full return of China's President Xi Jinping to the international stage this week. He held talks with President Biden on Monday and on Tuesday met with leaders of Australia and France to discuss a range of issues from strained trade relations to how to deal with vulnerable countries' debts. The BBC's Celia Hatton has more on that story.
the leader of South Korea, Yoon Suk-yeol, and the Prime Minister of Australia, Anthony Albanese. Both of those leaders came out of meetings with Xi Jinping striking a very optimistic tone. Now, all three of those countries, France, South Korea, Australia, have had really contentious relationships with Beijing in recent years. It looks like Xi Jinping is trying to start a new chapter.
That's the BBC's Celia Hatton reporting there. Now to Guangzhou in China, where violence has been breaking out as a result of COVID lockdowns. Social media videos show angry people overturning a police vehicle and a gunshot being fired. It's not the first time China's seen COVID protests, but this is definitely the worst, according to the BBC's Stephen McDonnell, who reports now from Beijing.
Crowds of workers in Guangzhou's lockdown Haiju district have defied stay-at-home orders and marched through the streets, smashing COVID barriers and at one point turning over a police vehicle. They're mainly itinerant labourers who've come from other parts of China to find jobs in the city. They say that anti-COVID measures have kept them at home for weeks and they can't afford not to be paid. There have also been complaints of food shortages and skyrocketing prices. Riot police have been sent in to control the situation. The latest official factory output and retail sales figures reflect the crushing economic impact of the pandemic and the government's policy responses to it. Last Friday, officials here announced a series of minor changes which have softened some measures, sparking hope that more easing could be planned. However, the strict zero COVID approach is currently increasing tensions right across the country. I'm the BBC's Stephen McDonnell for Marketplace.
Checking the numbers now, easing tensions between the world's two biggest economies at the G20 has today sent regional shares higher. The Shanghai Composite Index closed up 1.6%, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng surged over 4%. Fed Vice Chair Lael Brainard said this week that the central bank will slow the pace of rate hikes in the U.S. soon. China's President Xi Jinping then has asked countries at the G20 today to contain the fallout from interest rate rises on developing countries. The strong U.S. dollar has made imports more expensive for many countries around the world, raising concerns about mounting debt loads. The global population is expected to hit 8 billion people today, according to the United Nations. It's only been 11 years since we passed the last billion milestone, and the UN says the next one might take a bit longer to reach. The BBC's Stephanie Haggerty explains why the rate of growth is now slowing.
We had a big spike of population growth around the middle of last century, and that was because the fertility rate was quite high, but also children were surviving into adulthood. So that's why we saw this big spike in our population and why it's still growing now. But around the middle of the last century, fertility levels started to drop, first in Europe and the Americas, then that's moved towards China and India. And that's why the rate of growth is slowing right down. So you see in a country like India, their fertility rate is about 2 children per woman, but because so many people were born in past decades, the population continues to expand.
And let's dig into India for a second, because that country is expected to surpass China as the most populous country next year. But that poses some questions for the government, doesn't it?
Well, this huge challenge is clearly a kind of competition for resources. But India is in a kind of sweet spot right now because it can take advantage of this thing called the demographic dividend, which is where you have a lot of people of working age, but you don't have that many old people and you don't have that many young people. Old people, young people are expensive because you have to pay to care for them. They take other people out of the workforce as carers. Compare that to a country like Nigeria, where there's still a really high fertility rate. So still a lot of babies being born, a lot of children being born. And so Nigeria has a much bigger problem in that sense than India.
And that's a sort of a question for the entire continent, isn't it? Because these data show that half of future growth is expected to come from just 8 countries, and 5 of those are in Africa.
Yeah, so 5 of those countries are in Africa. But it's important to remember that it's not all of Africa by any means. The challenges are really in West Africa and across the Sahel. And the governments will really have to step up and try to provide education for those people, work harder to provide jobs as their population expands. Another problem is a lot of this expansion is happening in parts of the world where they're very vulnerable to climate change. So that's another thing that governments are really going to have to get on board. And we know in COP this week that a lot of these countries are calling for more funding to try and tackle those effects.
The BBC's Stephanie Haggerty, thanks so much for breaking this down.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.